Hey, glad you can make it. And welcome to the Employee Cycle Podcast, where we talk to HR innovators, thought leaders, and even some disruptors about the latest in HR trends, HR tech, and you guessed it, HR data. Well, you've heard enough of me talking. Now let's start the show. Before we begin, let's hear a quick message from our sponsor.
Hello, HR. It's me, your HR data. And I need to apologize. I'm sorry for being all over the place. I'm sorry for being difficult. I'm sorry for not being there for you. But it's not my fault. You put me in different HR systems and messy spreadsheets. But guess what? I now have a new friend, and their name is Employee Cycle. They can put all of me in one HR dashboard for you and keep me updated and simple so we'll better understand each other. Look, we're smarter when we're working together, so if you want me to show you my full potential, please go to employeecycle.com to get your free demo today. That's employeecycle.com. Promise me you'll go. Our relationship depends on it.
Hello, folks, and welcome back to the Employee Cycle Podcast. I am your host, Bruce Marable, and today we have the VP of People and Culture at Inkling, Marie Such. Let's give it up and give a big round of applause for Marie. Thank you for attending the podcast. Thank you so much.
Absolutely.
So glad to have you. So today we're going to have a discussion about building a culture with a remote workforce. But before we get into the topic, I would love for you to provide me and the listeners with a little bit of background of how did you end up in the wonderful world of HR?
Sure. So as many people I'm sure have stated on this program before, it's been a bit of a winding road for me, right? I didn't set out with HR as my journey's goal. But certainly in hindsight, I can see that lots of my academic and professional choices were really, they're sort of tremendous underpinnings to a sort of career in quote unquote people. So my training, my sort of formal training, is in content and in culture. I studied the Italian Middle Ages in college, you know, and I eventually got a master's degree in the same subject. And after school, I ended up working at a publisher of Italian culinary magazines. So as you might imagine, that is really, it's all about culture. It's about community. It's about belonging. I mean, there's really sort of a whole set of things that kind of form a lifestyle. And I sort of, I got to see people who really, you know, they built their whole travel schedule, their home decor, the, you know, their reading around sort of a particular set of lifestyle choices. And so I learned a ton about kind of what motivation looks like in a group of people. And I also happened to be a lifelong musician. I played the cello from very early on and ended up finding a real passion for a somewhat obscure early instrument when I was in college. It's called the viola da gamba. So it's an early string that sort of predates modern strings. And I mean, talk about passionate subculture. Like, this is one. So I ended up being on the board of the sort of National Society of this instrument. And so I arrived at Inkling, my current company, basically through the door of editorial content. When Inkling began, it was an ed tech startup. And over the course of my first few years at the company, I built and ran teams and basically discovered that I loved to manage and to think about more systematic ways to make people effective, not just within my function, which was content, right? And so when the opportunity sort of came up it's really when we kind of shifted our business model to essentially more akin to what we do today. The CEO and I had a conversation about what my role could be in that new world. And since I had a reasonably large amount of credibility within the organization, sort of in a reputation for kind of figuring things out, I got the opportunity to really build our people function from the ground up, right? You know, I didn't have any formal training, but I really had a sort of gut sense of where to start when building an org for Inkling and for what we needed. And I was very lucky that I had some good connections to plumb in terms of other HR leaders in our VC portfolio. And I asked anyone who was willing to have a call or coffee or lunch with me, you know, to get advice, hear their best practices, and really, you know, also just did it, kind of went in there and figured things out, made a bunch of mistakes, learned from them. And that's sort of where I've gotten to today.
And could you also give some background around what does Inkling do?
Sure. So, right, Inkling, like many startups, has had some twists and turns over its lifespan. I've been at the company for the vast majority of that. I'm going on 7.5 years here. So today, Inkling is a platform that powers the world's deskless workforces, right? All of those people out there, the employees, I mean, this is the Employee Cycle podcast, and we think about employees, right? Those people who currently rely on immediately outdated paper binders, right? Or bad software to get the information they need to do their jobs well, those are the people that Inkling is going to help. Like, Inkling is the core of how they can get their information much more efficiently and elegantly. We essentially build tools and distribution solutions to make beautiful digital content at scale. And so, you know, sort of our authoring environment, as well as the kind of consumption environment, all in a very sort of mobile-oriented way, means that so people on a store floor, how do they actually decide what they're going to do? Well, Inkling can give you the tasks and notifications that you need to understand how to prioritize your workflow. And if you need to look up, say, you know, the more complicated reference manual on like how to set something up, Inkling does that in a really scalable, beautiful HTML way. So it's all searchable. It feels like a consumer search experience, as opposed to just go to your binder and look up page 147. And like, then maybe you'll find the info. Oh, wait, but we changed something since this, you know, binder was actually printed.
Got it. And that was awesome. So our topic for today is building a culture with a remote workforce. And how do you do that? Before we begin, let's really define what a remote workforce means. There's so many ways that I think people can define it. Remote being you can work in the office, out of the office. Remote being there's no office and everyone works independently from coffee shops or from home. So can you please define for the audience, what do you think is a remote workforce?
Well, in some ways, it's all of those things, right? You know, and for us here at Inkling, you know, we happen to have the model where we have a headquarters office, and then we do have a number of employees who are scattered across the country, and we don't have any sort of other really giant hub. You know, we don't have an office in Chicago, right? We happen to have 3 employees who do work from Chicago, and it's because their work is oriented more towards customers. We have a lot of customers out there. And so, again, for us, we have a bit of the traditional model, again, where there's sort of a centralized set of people working in the office, and then people who, for their most, you know, the business reasons, are going to be actually located somewhere else. But I mean, you bring up an interesting point, right? Because there is a movement towards like the flexibility of like how office culture works, right? And like what work actually is, and do Yep. you need to be co-located in order to make it happen? Now, there's tons of benefits that happen when people are in the same place, right? I mean, this is sort of talking about the kind of the water cooler innovation, right? The sort of like, you happen to be at lunch with an engineer and talking about, you know, a problem you're facing, and then you sort of together, because you are approaching a problem from very different mindsets, come up with a really innovative solution. That is real. I mean, I've seen that happen for sure. So, you know, what do you do to create opportunities for things like that if you do have a workforce that isn't going to, you know, have the opportunity, just sort of like those collision points, I think people are calling them, right?
Yeah.
You know, for me, I mean, and clearly, again, given the background that I just gave you, right, communication is my jam, right? How do you think about the way information gets from one person to another, one group to another? And so I find that, you know, if I'm sort of quote unquote thinking about people operations, internal comms is a huge part of your mandate if you're in a people operations role and running a team. Because again, you know, you could all be in the same office and there still can be issues of like people basically feeling siloed. And it's like, they might as well be working in Philly. Like, you know, they even if they're just essentially across the office, if the channels are not kind of built and there's a nice groove of that kind of info going back and forth. So, you know, I think, again, remote workforces in general, the problems and the opportunities that you have there should be thought about by folks who don't have any workers working outside of headquarters as well. It's kind of a universal set of challenges and opportunities, if that makes sense.
It does. So I don't know if this happened before you joined Inkling or you were part of the decision making to make this happen, but what did that decision process look like to say we are going to allow people to either have some type of flexible schedule or work from home or not work from the office at all, or be open enough to hire and work with people outside of our region in general?
Yeah, it's a great question. And it's one that you have to really think through, right? Basically, once you open the door, you are making a choice as a company. And the choice you really have to make this successful is you're going to pay attention to this, and you are going to assign the resources and the kind of the brain space to making your remote workers. I mean, I don't care if it's two people out of 100, right? It's you are choosing to make sure that your technology works. You're choosing to make sure that you have the logistics in place and the thoughtful care for like schedules to make that happen. So, you know, for typically, I feel like the decision gets made when, from a business perspective, you want to open up a front with either customers or sales. And that was true for us. We kind of initially began a foray by having an employee who was actually a San Francisco-based employee move out to New York. It was supposed to be a temporary assignment, right, to kind of see what was out there and figure it out. And then he ended up staying, right? And that's where he is to this day. He's still an employee actually at Inkling, but is one of our sort of mainstay New York employees. And so I'm wondering actually from your perspective and from what you've heard, do you find that that's typically the entree point for companies to start? It's like it's a sales or potentially like a customer success question? Or is it more of like a talent marketplace question?
That's interesting. From the companies that we've worked with and also companies that I've just spoken to and other CEOs that I talked to in the Philly area, it's typically from a marketplace driven standpoint of, especially if we're talking about the tech space.
For sure.
Depending on what market you're in, you want people who have seen it, done it, lived through it before. They've battle tested. They have the experience to be able to run a certain division. And sometimes when you're finding those unicorns or ninjas or just awesome kick-ass people, whatever you want to call them, they're either not willing to move, or you make the executive decision to say, you know what, it's probably good for them to just stay where they are because they already have a network. We don't need them to uproot their family. And they might be so awesome that you're willing to build an office around that person. Mm-hmm. And in the future, you think that it might be good for you to just have people in that area as well. So I don't necessarily think, in my opinion, that most of the time it's people moving and then just still allowing them and keeping them to work with the company. But sometimes I think it's a lot more intentional of we need to find people and those people just won't move or we just don't want them to. But I also think it's very industry dependent. Because if you're also working with someone in an industry where there really are not that many people to actually work in the business or in the industry, then you're definitely going to allow that person to move and then keep their job. Because if you lose them, then there's no one else to hire.
Right, right. I mean, and there's also sort of the concern or just the consideration for particular functions, right, where you do in fact want a spread, like say across time zones. You know, we made a deliberate choice to actually have somebody on the support team be on the East Coast so that it was, you know, more about the hours, right? That are sort of our typical business hours out there, and that we would just have coverage, you know, across. Wait, yeah, 3 hours doesn't seem like a lot, but it is, right? And so again, to sort of make sure that we're, you know, appropriately serving our customers, kind of throughout the org, that was a business decision we, you know, very deliberately made to lodge somebody out there on the East Coast.
So this is really interesting to me because I am always thinking about this as CEO of our company as well. Managing the culture around different types of people, different personalities, you know, stereotypically developers are willing to just have tunnel vision and work from wherever where you don't want to be disturbed, whereas more stereotypical outgoing and kumbaya people maybe in sales will thrive better in an environment where there's a lot more people around them doing the same thing, motivating when you're constantly making calls or going out there, people constantly telling you no, you want that moral support. So have you looked to design your workforce culture from a remote versus internal at the office environment based off of which positions will thrive more from being in an office versus being able to work remotely? or is it other factors and variables that went into that decision?
I think the factor, it certainly plays a part, right? You know, because of the first question you have to ask yourself, can this job actually be done remotely? You know, is there either the need for sort of great long swaths of independent work with appropriate check-ins, you know, to make sure things don't go off course. But frankly, you know, the sort of solitude aspect of it doesn't seem like to be a huge detractor, you know, or are there, again, business reasons, like from a travel perspective, are you actually, you know, getting somebody who is a more customer-facing role and so, you know, thrives on perhaps that energy? However, you know, the likelihood of them being on the road 90% of the time if they were based in San Francisco is quite high anyway. And so in fact, you know, it's less wearing on the person and certainly less wearing on the budget if you sort of locate them in a place that is frankly more often where they're going to be. So you know, have to sort of, I think this through. There's also the consideration of the actual person you're talking to, you know, and the experience they have or have not had working remotely. That is a big shift that I find, you know, some people, they perhaps don't quite understand just how different it is to be an independent worker as part of a larger company, say not an independent contractor, right? You know, that kind of work, people have sort of made the choices and, you know, in fact, I think have driven themselves more towards working like that because it really resonates with them. But if you have someone who, like, you know, has been in an office quite a lot and then, you know, gets a job with a company, but they're going to be remote, it's a really big shift. So what do you do to set them up for success? And so in terms of how we think of culture here, we are careful to really say that if you're a remote employee, you are a full participant in what we do here at headquarters. And so when I said before the idea that, you know, as a company, when you're opening this door, you are making a choice to devote the resources that are going to be necessary to make this work. The way that looks for me is that on my team, the people and culture team, I have a sub team that is really sort of all about employee experience. And there is somebody on that team, right, who sort of owns the remote blots. We call our employees ink blots. And so this person, you know, owns the remote blot idea. So that means that they're, you know, always thinking about what is the experience like for somebody who's not here. And that spans so much. It's the logistical. Do the Chromeboxes work in the conference rooms so that you can video conference somebody in and they can participate in a meeting? You know, when we're having our all brains meetings, this is our monthly all hands. Is there a Slack channel that's for remote attendees that, you know, again, my person who owns it here is monitoring to ensure that the sound is coming through, that people here in the room are using the microphone when they're asking questions from the audience so it actually feeds through the Zoom presentation? You know, and so that's sort of the basic side of things. Again, that you think, oh, Marie, that's not really culture. That's absolutely culture, right? Because if you – how many times have we all been on a conference call where you can't hear – and so you just start spacing out. I mean, is everyone raising their hand right now? Because, right? It's incredibly frustrating. And you just, you know, you just sort of give up after a while, right? And so it really actually takes a fair amount of vigilance, you know, again, both from the, like, does the equipment work? Have people been thoughtful about putting a remote meeting invite into calendar invites? Are people thoughtful about when they schedule meetings? We actually used to have our all hands at 4:30 p.m. on Friday, you know, a little sort of happy hour action, right? People could get a beer. We could talk about, you know, what's happening. And think about what that's like for a New York-based employee, right? That's 7:30 p.m. on a Friday night. You have a family. Like that doesn't work very right. well, right? And we really, like, our all brains are not optional. Like we come together as a company very deliberately to sort of celebrate successes, talk about things we could do better, celebrate our people, learn about them. And so we moved it. So now we have it on Thursday mornings. We have it at 10 a.m. on Thursday mornings so that, you know, that's it gives people from across the country the opportunity to participate. And so we have bagels instead of beer. you know, so again, I think that the idea of culture and just sort of someone or some group of people really being the conscious stewards of, you know, how do we make this an inclusive environment? it's critical, and just, you got to know what you're signing up for, because if you know, you can live if you don't do this, but those people will feel like appendages, right? They will not feel like part of the core. And that means, I think, you're not getting all you can out of that relationship and out of that employee.
So everything that I'm hearing so far ties back to being intentional about having a remote workforce, and don't let it happen by chance. Don't really get blindsided by the fact that all your people are walking all over the place and you absolutely have no idea how to manage this process.
Yep.
So just wanted to highlight that for all of our listeners to make sure that they're being intentional. So I have a question, which I think is really interesting. I've seen a lot of articles recently come out about the lack in productivity from people being at the office and really having I think from a parental standpoint, it was tiger moms or helicopter parents having helicopter employees or employers actually just watching over people to make sure that they're actually doing the work, when in essence, the person might only have enough work to fill up 50 to 75% of the time at best. So for the rest of the time, they're Facebook, Instagram, Tinder, WhatsApp, Snapchat, Amazon shopping. So they figure that they should be working at home because they can get the amount of work done and not have to feel that pressure of trying to look busy versus not actually doing work. So my question to you is, do you think people really want to work at home? And do you think all people who can work from home should work from home?
I'm going to give you a not fully straight answer because it's a gray area, right? I think that it all comes down to trust, right? You know, what have you done to create an environment where you treat people like grownups? You give them clear expectations around what are the results we need to get as a company? How, as a manager, am I going to support you in doing that? And how are you, as an employee, going to honor your necessity of feedback to me if you don't have enough to do, or if you are blocked on something, or, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, right? So the idea of, like, you know, if somebody has 50% of their time actually filled up and then essentially they're just like a butt in a seat, like, that's a breakdown, again, of communication and trust between that person and that person's manager. And maybe that person's manager doesn't know, right? So then it's a breakdown between that person's manager and, like, the executive team around, like, what are we actually trying to accomplish here? And so I think that working from home, well, first of all, I think it is a privilege, not a right, because I do think that there is the necessity of really, again, that kind of that pact and that trust between a manager and employee. Like, I'm going to get things done, and I may need to do it in a slightly more flexible way. You know, maybe, again, my productivity time between 2 and 4 in the morning, like, that is just, I am on and I'm working. Okay. I would balance that, however, with the idea that when you're creating a community, there is something really valuable about being physically together at least some of the time. And so, again, being intentional about, say, our remote employees, ensuring that they do actually come back to headquarters on a regular cadence, having my team be very thoughtful about when we create employee events, like, for example, our holiday party. As far in advance as we possibly can, we're really getting that date out to the remote people. We're really working with managers to have business trips out to headquarters be co-timed with things that the whole company is going to be participating in, right? And so it's like finding those touch points, which then I think increases the trust that allows for a more flexible schedule. So when you say, you know, should people work from home? I have no problem with it happening. I do think there are certain roles where it becomes more difficult to do that on a regular basis. Managerial roles for me feel like doing that, you know, sort of the majority of the time gets a little difficult because you're missing some of the unspoken cues, the things that don't come through in email or in Slack. But in general, I'm a fan of creating something that sort of is built on a foundation of trust, and ultimately people are feeling stretched to do their best work, but allowed to do it in a way that sort of doesn't put up unnecessary obstacles.
Interesting. So you brought up holiday parties, which is interesting from a standpoint of all of the employees getting together, celebrating, having fun, coming together face to face to build bonds and relationships and, you know, strengthen those relationships between the people you're working with on a daily basis. And if you have people all around the country, or sometimes even in a region, those remote employees might not be able to get there. So if you have those employees who may not be able to get there, what do you do in regards to still making them feel like they're not missing out on all of the things that are happening internally? And then another question tied to that is, how do you not make the remote employees feel that they aren't necessarily getting the best treatment? They aren't necessarily getting the best ability to get the promotion because they're not getting that face-to-face time and building relationships with managers and executives. So, I mean, it's kind of two different questions, but it's almost the same thing in regards to just not being there to be present and top of mind to be able to really get the most benefit from the company.
Yeah, no, they're great questions. And I know it's top of mind for people who, you know, are out there and, again, feel a little bit out of the orbit. So let me answer the first one, which is, you know, from the sort of like events and participating in the kind of quote unquote like fun culture. Again, this all comes back to the intentional idea of having increasing awareness that those people actually participate. So I'll give you an example. We're doing basically a secret Santa right now, and remote bots are participating via proxy because somebody from my team, right, you know, is actually basically being the elf for them. We'll, you know, they're sending in gifts and we're covering the shipping if they have a secret Santa here at headquarters. Again, that person actually every month goes through our kitchen. You know, we have a more typical startup, you know, we bring in lunch and we have some snacks in the kitchen. The person on my team actually packs up a little priority mailbox of snacks, just a sort of selection from things, and mails it to each remote employee every month. Now, you might think, Jean Marie, that's a little ridiculous that you're like shipping a package of chips across the country to somebody because like they could totally buy those chips and like, does it? That's not the point, right? The point is there's, you know, this moment where they get this box. I mean, who doesn't like receiving mail, right? They get this box, they open it up, and it's like a very tangible sense of, hey, we're thinking about you. Like you exist to us, right? And you exist as more than just say like a number on a spreadsheet or like whatever your job function is. You exist to us as a human and as part of this company. And one other thing that we have done, again, to just sort of make their presence known. So I had an issue. Dogged on conference calls earlier because, you know, when you just have a Polycom, like sort of headset or handset rather, sitting on a big conference room table and somebody is on that, you know, but the rest of the room is talking in conference call, it is so easy to forget that somebody's on the phone, right? And then suddenly you'll hear this little burbling up from the phone. Everyone's like, oh yeah, right. Bruce is here. Hey, Bruce, you know? And so right. In order to counteract that, I actually had cardboard cutouts made of every single one of our remote employees. Now they're tabletop ones, so it's basically just torsos, but you know, they're almost life size. I had them made so that you can bring that into a conference room and park it in front of the Polycom, and then you see Bruce's face right there. You are so much more likely to address Bruce on the phone if you have that visual reminder that he's here. Plus, we then also have these hilarious cardboard cutouts that actually sit on the desks that are reserved for remote employees.
That's amazing. And, you know,
they get dressed up. Sometimes they're wearing bandanas. Sometimes, like, they have a Santa hat on. I mean, it becomes, again, part of a sort of a fun, you know, element of like, hey, these people exist to us. And like, we can sort of joke about it, but also it really is, it keeps it more top of mind. So I know, again, that seems a little bit silly, but the difference is pretty profound, I would say, you know, in terms of just like, again, the engagement that other people have. And I'm talking about like, you know, the random IC engineer that like sort of never actually talks to the remote salesperson. But when that person shows up at a company event, that IC engineer has actually seen their face before, right? And it's not sort of like, who is that guy, right? There is sort of just, it's like you're making these neural pathways a little bit easier for people to traverse. Yeah.
No, I like that. I like that. And that sounds fun. I can imagine us doing something like that. That would be really fun to dress up the cardboard cutouts.
Yeah. I mean, you can, I guess I see you sort of like march them to a meeting with you and there you have it.
Got it. So do you have to reinforce the culture and what the culture means for all the workforce more so with a remote workforce than if everyone worked in the same space all the time? Or does it not matter and the culture doesn't necessarily have to be reinforced? It's just, it just kind of oozes and spreads as everyone works together.
I think part of it is, again, how what's your talent acquisition process actually like, right? You know, you are, when you're hiring people, you are hiring them to be stewards of your culture. And that doesn't mean you're hiring exactly the same people you already have, right? But you are hiring people to, within sort of these guardrails, really figure out how to carry your company forward. And when you have people who are outside of the office, again, it sort of comes down to the communication channels idea. People in the office need just as many different reinforcing mechanisms of culture as someone remote, right? Hmm. And it means that, like, you've got to think about, you know, the written communication that you are putting out there, the verbal communication you're putting out there. And so that's where, again, a remote workforce is going to have less exposure to that. So you need to really ensure that the things that are more available to everyone, whether it's like via Slack, it's via the newsletter, it's via, you know, things that get recorded because it's a CEO message. And, like, you know, we just, you know, we feel at the beginning of every quarter, you know, it allows us to sort of reboot. Are we all on the same page? I would say, again, the idea of sort of the cultural signature experiences that your company might have. So for us, we have everybody in the company read a book called Conscious Business. It's by Fred Kaufman. I think LinkedIn had a big, I mean, I think he may have worked at LinkedIn for a little while, but he didn't write it under the auspices of that. But it is a reasonably well-known book. And that really, to us, is kind of a core signature experience of what it means to work here. And when somebody who is remote comes onto the team after their sort of initial onboarding, which, by the way, we do here, you know, for at least 2 weeks at the beginning of someone's tenure, right? They come out, they stay in San Francisco, you know, in an Airbnb or something for 2 weeks. We really let them sort of meet all of the executives and all of the different functions. And then thereafter, I run a reading club for Conscious Business, and remote employees have to participate in it just as if they were here. And again, the sort of idea of we're all starting from the same core principles of what it means to be a conscious employee and be a good colleague to one another. They get that exactly the same as everybody else does here. And sort of that vocabulary and that feeling. And so, you know, I try to err on the side of, you know, you're getting the same experience that somebody here is going to get. And sure, I mean, to your point, are you going to have to be a little bit extra in terms of intention to make sure they get caught up on certain stuff that they wouldn't otherwise see because they're not in the hallways? Yes. But at the end of the day, I'm seeking that they have, you know, the same exposure and the same level of kind of connection to what it is we're building here together.
So everything that you said has been great. It's been awesome. And I know that there are a lot of listeners, once they hear this episode, that are going to truly agree with everything that you're saying. And for those that are looking to or thinking about potentially creating a remote workforce environment or system, we would love to give them a plan or some type of outline of steps that they can take. Because on our podcast, we always like to make sure that we have actionable steps that every HR person can leave the podcast with. So if I have bought in to everything that you're saying, Marie, and I want to be intentional about this, where do I start? Do I create a plan? Do I talk to my executives to tell them, or my stakeholders and partners to tell them that during the recruitment process, I think that we may need to widen the scope and widen the funnel to start thinking about hiring people in another city, state, another coast, another part of the country? I mean, what do I do in order to really start this and be intentional about this plan?
Good. Great. So the way I would approach it is, again, as I think you basically just said, why are you doing this? Figure that out for yourself first. And, you know, the answer may be, you know, I'm not totally sure I want to do this, but I want to explore to see if, say, the talent marketplace is going to be much wider. And so really it's almost a pilot program. And so, okay, fine. That's your hypothesis. I'm piloting this because I think it is going to make something I'm doing right now that's hard easier. It's going to, you know, increase our business in this way. So it's almost a business case formulation. So make sure you have that for yourself, because you're taking on something more complex with remote workers. So there's got to be a benefit to you. Then I would actually just take a quick dip, you know, into the logistics waters and make sure that, you know, from a benefits and like payroll perspective, you are ready for what is going to come in when you bring in a remote workforce. It's like, if you have only Kaiser health plans and you're based in California, what are you going to do for that person who is now remote and can't participate in your Kaiser benefit plan? You know, so it's like that kind of stuff can trip you up. Yes, you can handle that later, but at least get a sense of the scope of what you're going to have to do ahead of time. You know, your payroll group is going to have to open up basically, you know, you're going to have to pay taxes in other states. This is not hard to do, but it is a thing you have to do, right? And so just being kind of prepared on those levels, like, okay, what does this actually mean? So think a little bit about the logistics. Think a little bit about the budget implications of travel. You know, make sure you're kind of talking to finance. Then what is your communication capacity going to be? What are the technologies that you use within your company, right? You know, if you have a giant office with lots of conference rooms, are you going to designate some of them to be video conferencing specific? Are you going to, I mean, even just sort of conference phones, maybe you don't even have phones. I mean, lots of companies, you know, just basically everyone's on their cell. So as boring as this seems, getting a sense of the landscape of the building blocks of what you're going to need. I'm not saying you need to build them before, hey, you start recruiting for those other people, but you don't want those to come and like bite you later after sort of something, you already have something up and running and it kind of will set you back, if that makes sense. And then I think sort of the third component, so really we've talked about logistics, we've talked about communication, and actually I'm going to return to communication one second. And then third, you know, the idea of culture. Do you have a definition of what your culture is? You know, it's a little bit of like your employee value prop. Can you actually talk about that? You know, and what do you want to really transmit to somebody who's coming in from the outside and ask them to sort of bring and help you evolve? So those are sort of the three main buckets I would think about and create kind of a plan within each about how you're going to sort of answer some of these questions. And again, you can kind of think simultaneously as you're starting to recruit and see what the marketplace is out there. But if you are intentional in those three spaces, you're going to be way ahead of the game as you start to bring people on. Oh, and I said I wanted to say one more thing about communication too. And this is probably one of the areas that I see folks forget about, the time zone sensitivity, especially for other people who are already working where you are. And this may be even a conversation with your executives. What are you going to do, you know, when somebody's work day is actually shifted reasonably significantly from yours? It changes the way you have to communicate. It depends on the size of your organization, but that is the number one way you can piss off a remote employee is by asking them to again and again and again and again have a meeting in the middle of the dinner time that they're having with their kids. So that's, you know, step one, don't do that.
Got it. And thanks for that plan. I think that was definitely actionable for our listeners. But you just spoke about engagement, and I'm assuming that you tie engagement into culture, correct?
I do.
So yes. How do you measure, and just to start to bring data into it, how do you measure engagement with a remote workforce? Is it exactly the same as you would measure it if everyone was in the same office? Do you measure it differently? And I know it's supposed to be very data-driven, but it also seems as though there's this unwritten rule of what my gut is telling me in regards to how engaged a person is. You know, if sometimes people will count, and for better or for worse, people will count how many times you go to the outings. Or you're going to the events, or you're participating in philanthropy work where the company would do a team cleanup or go feed at a homeless shelter or something where you actually have to be physically present to do that. So how do you measure engagement in the office, outside of the office, in general when you have a remote workforce?
Yeah. I mean, I wish we could just do sort of a needle stick with everybody and like test how engaged they were. That would be so much easier, right? You know, we don't have any sort of bulletproof ways to quote unquote measure it. You use a lot of different metrics, and it's somewhat subjective, right? You know, I know that there's a lot of people who are using great software tools out there to, you know, sort of do pulse surveys, and that's awesome. You know, if you can kind of make that work for you, I don't think that works for every company. And fundamentally, again, I think it comes back to a relationship that remote employee has, particularly with his or her manager, and the, you know, sort of sense of, I mean, first of all, it's like, why do you care about engagement? You know, it's like if your engagement to you is just sort of like how present you are at these different physical things that we offer, and like, are you smiling? Do you look like you're having fun? Like, how much is that actually telling you, right? Mm-hmm. The engaged employee is the one who's, you know, asking questions, like pushing back, getting feedback, taking feedback, doing, you know, interesting, innovative work, and, you know, making mistakes and learning from them and trying again. And like that type of engagement, right, is you're going to be much more visible to someone who is working with that individual on a regular basis. So, you know, I think a few different ways you can think about measuring that kind of stuff, depending on sort of how you set up your, like, basically like feedback loops, you know, on projects. Presumably your remote employees are going to be collaborating with other employees at headquarters or even other remote employees to get initiatives completed, right? So, you know, what does that look like, you know, in terms of participation, right? And in terms of actual deliverables. And it's function specific in a lot of ways, but, you know, that's the, you having a robust sort of set of feedback loops, whether it's at the end of a project, you know, sort of a quick feedback loop for the people who were on that project, you know, in terms of participation of everybody, or, you know, depends on, you know, how often you actually do, say, check-ins and reviews in a kind of formal way with your manager. But for us, we are a very strong one-on-one culture. So I almost can't imagine having a remote workforce where like you don't have that. I mean, our managers typically are meeting with their employees every week, sometimes every other week if it's sort of appropriate for that team. And those meetings are sort of a constant place of innovation, I would say. You know, it's not just a tactical to-do. If it is a tactical to-do list, you're kind of doing it wrong. And that's how we're kind of coaching managers to make better use of that time. And so that manager has a pulse on where that remote employee is, even if they, you know, sort of can't face-to-face it each time. So that to me is a much more effective and ongoing way of measuring engagement than just sort of these, like, in some ways falsely constructed sort of sets of, well, you know, we can measure how many people showed up at the volunteer day. Sure, you can measure it, but should you? Does it tell you like what you actually need to know? Or, you know, again, measure it and only take that data for what it actually can tell you, and don't kind of try and twist that into a sort of causation relationship. So that sort of removes the need for people to only be participating physically, I think, in things that, again, are just not really proxies for engagement in my mind.
You just spoke about collaboration. And one of the things that happens in an office, especially with a newer employer or a newer employee who's working under a manager, is that they have a lot of questions. Things are moving very quickly. They can easily pop in the person's desk or the office and ask question after question after question. You might see them at the coffee room or the water fountain or whatever you have in the office. They can easily just walk by each other and just ask them a question. It's a lot less intrusive. But if you're remote and you have a bunch of questions, you're constantly Slacking, G-chatting, emailing, calling, which can seem like you're annoying the person. So therefore, you decrease the amount of questions you look to get answered. And then you're just not as efficient as their job. So I'm sure this doesn't happen with everyone, but how do you make sure that your culture is forcing this type of collaboration and forcing everyone to be open, knowing that the way in which the remote employee will have to communicate to the person, either in the office or to another remote person themselves, isn't annoying? Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And I think, again, about it's a somewhat expectation setting. And we're pretty careful in our onboarding process to emphasize, perhaps ad nauseum, perhaps we're being annoying, that questions are expected and are even demanded, right? Like, you know, we say your brain is right now so fresh coming at these problems. You're so valuable, right? Think about, you know, the next 4 weeks, like anything that you see and you ask questions about is going to be incredibly useful to this organization because it helps us not get stuck in old assumptions. You know, by like week 5 or 6, you're almost getting absorbed into like the way we think. And so we want people to take advantage of those, that first time where they can come in and really sort of find things out. And so I think another thing we emphasize is a sense of we don't have attachment to the way things have always been done if there's a better way. We call that ontological humility here. This comes from the Fred Coffin book, you know, sort of the sense that like my view on reality is not the only valid one. And, you know, if there are we have a discussion because you see it a different way. What I'm not going to do is get defensive or weird or think that you're dumb or anything like that. I'm sort of pledging that as an employer and, you know, each of my employees to anybody new coming in. This is not how we're going to react. Instead, you know, we strive to be open and interested and that kind of thing. So setting the tone and the expectation like that this is not annoying. And in fact, you know, we want you to do that. To some degree, you know, ensuring that early on there is a sort of kickstart to the relationship with a bunch of FaceTime so that the comfort level is increased. And, you know, now that I know you, Bruce, and we've spent a couple weeks together and I don't feel like I'm bothering you because we have a rapport, right? And, you know, you've emphasized to me just as you've been emphasized in the rest of onboarding that you're interested in what I have to say and what I'm asking you to do. I mean, Slack is, you know, it's an imperfect tool, but it has done a lot for the ability for people to kind of observe casual interactions, you know, that would otherwise have always taken place in person. Like the banter that occurs on the general channel is viewable to all employees, right? So they can participate in it and, you know, be part of the sort of the humor and the, you know, bonhomie or whatever. So there's real advantage there. I mean, and I can't tell you how many times I've seen, you know, I've walked by a conference room and like there is maybe it's a baby shower for somebody and, you know, they're FaceTiming the remote employees in. It's not like that only happens for work, right? You know, oh, we're going to, you know, pop some champagne because Julie just closed an engineer and, you know, he's going to start in 2 weeks. Like, great. Like, let's get, you know, somebody, you know, remote who participated in that interview panel to be there to celebrate as well. So, you know, I think that you have to erode the idea that it's annoying or I'm bothering you or what have you, just by both what you say and then by what you do in the sort of most micro moments as well as the macro moments.
And in regards to being intentional, again, are there perks and other in-office or local employee benefits that you should not bring to your organization if you have remote employees? For instance, I know there are certain companies that have free dry cleaning, or they might have a masseuse come in, or they might have a dog walking service, or whatever it is, whether it's really expensive or just very small. I mean, food in the office, not so much, but other things that you could benefit for free if you're actually at the office, should you not bring in those things because you make the remote employees feel left out? Do you have it to say, you know what, just because they're not here doesn't mean that we shouldn't do really special and awesome things for our in-office employees? How should that work?
I think I'm more in the camp of, you know, what is the right thing to do for your culture, your employees? You know, what are the benefits and the perks that make sense to you from a cost perspective and from an employee sort of happiness and attitude perspective? You're removing obstacles for them. And you're also, you know, we call that surprise and delight to a certain extent. Again, I actually have an OKR for someone on my team that involves surprise and delight for Inkblots. And, you know, that's both sort of like little, one-off types of things. And then, you know, thinking about what are the perks we should bring in. And the way we handle that is
typically you're not going to necessarily be able to offer exactly the same thing to your remote employees that you have in headquarters, simply because, you know, either the service doesn't exist where they are, or like there's not an economy of scale of doing it for just one person in a city or what have you. But you can absolutely then get creative about how you might modify that benefit for remote employees. I'll give you an example for us. We have a number of families in our office, right? Employees with young families. And so we offer a connection with Urban Sitter, which is a babysitting sort of on demand kind of thing that does not exist in every city, right? It exists in kind of the major cities. So if you're a remote employee in Philadelphia, you can also have an Urban Sitter membership and get a stipend. But if you live in rural such and such, right, it may not be there. But sort of creating a different way that you can actually have some sort of child care benefit that way. So it's a little bit. I work at a reasonably small organization. You're going to probably run into slightly different things as you scale larger. But how, working of course within the confines of like your legal and your finance, how are you doing things and creatively approaching giving people a sort of quote unquote perk experience while not necessarily trying to replicate it to the letter? So, you know, for me, the idea that like, oh, well, you know, it's got to be the lowest common denominator because we kind of can't offer it all around, that's probably not the way to go. But again, it's going to depend on your culture, sort of what your actual parameters are, your restrictions. But I would say do what you can to get creative and don't underestimate the sort of the thoughtfulness and the sort of connection that you can create simply by mailing a bag of chips across the country. You know, really, truly just sort of how do you create the opportunity for them to feel part of what's happening and feel seen, right? Feel heard, feel thought of. That's the core, you know, and that makes a connection back to headquarters and sort of lets that person feel like, oh yeah, no, I work at this company. I don't just work by myself. I work at this company.
Got it. Last question before we move on to the next section. Are there any lessons learned that you would like to share with the listeners to say, here are some of the things that we may have done wrong. Here are some of the things that some of your colleagues that you've seen managing a remote workforce have done wrong, so that the listeners don't have to start from ground zero, but that they can actually build on top of some of the things you may have already messed up and make sure that they can create, you know, a smooth and streamlined remote workforce culture. Although they're going to have their own hurdles based on their own company, let's just see if we can help them out a little bit.
Okay, two major things. One, make sure that you don't fall into the trap, and you meaning anybody in the sort of headquarters organization, whether that's the people ops group or that's like sort of the managers, you don't fall into the trap of thinking you're being redundant by ensuring that people who are remote have gotten the message. You really, really have to make sure that you reinforce messages that come through headquarters. And so that means like when you're on a one-on-one with them, don't make assumptions that they know they're exactly up to speed on what's happening. Really verbally go through it. And you're going to feel like, oh, wow, like I'm definitely saying things you already know. So check in with them, you know, and really, I think be very careful. Again, we're as humans, especially people who sort of are in the professional world, you tend to worry, oh, am I repeating myself? Did I already say that? Try and check that at the door and work out a kind of communication pattern with that other person so that they don't miss something. That's the primary thing. Again, the exhaustion. I didn't hear it on the conference call and I just, oh my God, I can't ask them to repeat it again. So do it. Make sure it gets repeated, you know, in another channel for them. And so communicate, and then do it again. And then over communicate, right? And if, you know, if it's too much, okay, fine. The person can scale you back, but like it's gonna feel like too much and it's actually gonna be just right. So that's number one. And number two, make sure your dang video conferencing like systems work. Whether it's Google Hangouts or it's Zoom or, you know, they all have their benefits and they all have their problems and they're all gonna break at inopportune times. So make sure your IT department has them installed correctly. Make sure everybody knows how to use them. I can't tell you, you know, we have all this like sophisticated equipment in the rooms. Somebody doesn't know like which sequence of buttons to press. And so suddenly someone is actually left out of an interaction. That's no good. So, you know, really, this is annoying, but like make sure that that equipment problem does not trip you up because it's a tremendous obstacle that just doesn't have to be there if you work at it a little bit.
I hope you all are taking notes because Marie is really dropping a lot of wisdom here. And we really appreciate it. So now we're going to move into a more fun section, one of my favorite sections of the podcast, which I like to call the real, the random, and the ridiculous, where I ask you a real, random, and ridiculous question. Are you ready?
Yep.
Okay. Real question. Do you like bread pudding? And if so, how do you like it made?
Yes, I love bread pudding.
Oh.
And what's not to love?
Love it first.
It's bread, it's pudding, it's delicious. You're kidding me? And here's the thing, Bruce. I even like savory bread pudding. That's my go-to brunch dish. Anyone wants to private message me, I will give you a fail-safe recipe for impressing people at brunch for savory bread pudding.
Interesting. Got it. Okay. Oh, we're going to be best friends. We're going to be best friends. So, random question. What is your favorite word and why?
Ooh, favorite word.
My favorite word. Okay, this has been on my bucket list. My favorite word is sequin. And I don't know if that's really true, but that's the one that's like really coming to mind right now.
Okay.
And here's why. It's because I found out here's my medieval history degree coming in to be useful, that it actually comes from the Italian word zecca, Z-E-C-C-A, which means mint. Because, you know, in Venice, right, you know, they had these mints where they actually were mint coins, and that Venice was sort of also the place where people got really glamorous. It was a very stylish city. And so sequin, which of course now that you think about it, does look like kind of a shiny coin, actually is etymologically related to the word zecca for mint. And I just think that's so cool. And I've been waiting to drop that knowledge in a cocktail party situation, but I'm going to take podcast instead.
Well, the podcast is sort of like a cocktail party.
Yeah.
So that's
with great. No cocktails.
With no cocktails. Other than that. Man, I didn't know this was going to turn into a history class. So I enjoyed that.
Always.
I enjoyed that. And the ridiculous question. So you are located in the famous Silicon Valley, correct?
Yes. Well, I live in Oakland, but my company's in San Francisco, but we're in that general nexus. Yes.
So I have a very funny, ridiculous question for you, and that's, what's the most ridiculous startup idea that you've seen recently or since you've been out there? And we don't have to name any companies by name, but just concept. For instance, I'll give one. Yeah. One company that I saw a couple years ago was a startup that allowed you to pay, let's just say, $25 in exchange for $2 in quarters to be delivered to you. So that you could do your laundry.
Wow. Laundry emergency, huh?
Right. I don't even know if it was on demand. I think it was subscription. But to me, I thought that was ridiculous. Maybe other people might find it useful. But for you, are there any ideas? And I had to pick on this because you're in the Valley. You're in the general area.
I have to say, I think it's some of the ones that are around pet care that kind of come through, which, like, I mean, I love my dog like as much as the next guy kind of thing, but there are for sure like companies being built up around sort of these highly specialized little areas of like doing something, you know, it's like, we'll come and give your doggy a pedicure. Like, you know, on it's sort of like the bike ones that, you know, actually I think the bike ones are kind of smart where they'll like kind of come to your office and like, you know, just work on your bike right out there because you can't take it somewhere else. But like the idea of sort of like, you know, oh my God, Fido needs his nails painted right now, you know, quick, right? Seems a little bit like it's, you're kind of like, really? Am I on candid camera? Like there's kind of this sense of excess that, but people take it very seriously. That's the thing is like, you know, typically the most ridiculous ideas are accompanied by an earnestness that is like almost belies belief, right? You're sort of like, wow, really? You Correct. See a pain point there, huh? Good for you. You don't want to rain on anyone's parade, I suppose.
Got it. Love that. Thanks for that. And the last question of the podcast, which I am always eager and excited to hear answered, is what is your favorite and least favorite part of HR?
My favorite part. I love getting people unstuck. I think that's incredibly satisfying. You know, those moments where you're in a conversation and it's like you just sort of see a release, or you kind of, you're there to sort of help them jump across a chasm, and they do, and they're so proud of themselves. And, you know, you don't think to yourself, oh, I'm taking credit for that. You just think like, yeah, like right on. I mean, that's just, it sort of, it gets me every time. And, you know, the least favorite part is, you know, you're on the front lines of people doing dumb stuff, right? Good people doing dumb things and tripping and falling down, and sort of that can get wearing. And the, you know, the way I've kind of characterized this, and sort of anyone talks to me about wanting to do this, or, you know, how are you as an HR professional, how are you a colander and not a sponge? That's one of my favorite expressions, that, you know, how are you catching the important stuff that comes through, but not soaking it all up yourself? Because you absolutely will become not only miserable, right, but much less effective in what it is you need to accomplish. And so, you know, teaching that kind of behavior, you know, to anybody else, right? Like, it's not like you just have to be in HR to benefit from being a colander, not a sponge. But that's one that I think about a lot, especially when navigating the kind of the least favorite parts.
Got it. That was awesome. Colander, not a sponge. That's definitely going in the show notes.
I should definitely bumper sticker that. Yeah.
You should. Well, Marie, this has been such an awesome interview. I want to thank you so much for participating as a guest.
Woo!
Yay! Thanks, Chris.
Thank you. So where can people find you and Inkling on the internet?
We are www.inkling.com. So, and I'm in Marie at inkling.com. So hit me up, bread pudding recipe. I'm not kidding.
Oh, nice. I will be the first to email you about that.
Yeah.
And is Inkling hiring?
We are. Yes. Always. And we're actually hiring remote workers as well. So you live, you know, across the country and do something great that we're interested in, absolutely, let me know.
Awesome. Well, Marie, thanks again. This was great. I know I personally learned a lot from all the wisdom you dropped on the podcast, and I will be in your area for a wedding in Sonoma in May, so I will definitely be there for bread pudding. So
fabulous.
Pencil me in. But for you listeners out there, thanks so much for listening. Hope you really enjoyed the episode. If you did, please give us a 5-star ratings on iTunes and make sure that we are downloaded on your favorite podcast player on your phone. Also, just a quick reminder, if you have a lot of HR data scattered all over the place, you're an HR person who wants to become a lot more data driven, you want to understand more about your business, you can always go to employeecycle.com to learn more about our dashboard. So again, make sure that you continue to train, hire, and retain the best workforce possible. Thanks. Later, kids.